I want to take a second to remind you to sign up for the Poso Daily Brief. It is completely free. It'll be one email that's sent to you every day. You can stop the endless scrolling, trying to find out what's going on in your world. We will have this delivered directly to you, totally for free. Go to humanevents.com/Poso. Sign up today. It's called the Poso Daily Brief. Read what I read for show prep. You will not regret it. Humanevents.com/Poso. Totally free. The Poso Daily Brief.
This is what happens when the fourth turning meets fifth generation warfare.
A commentator, international social media sensation, and former Navy intelligence veteran.
This is Human Events with your host, Jack Posobiec.
Deliver us from evil.
The Democrats, how do all of us on that side say January 6th was wrong if you can have the same pictures going on college campuses?
Lord, don't make a parallel with January 6th.
You lose the moral high ground.
That has happened, though.
So far, at least 2,000 demonstrators have been arrested at protests all across the country. Now President Biden is speaking out, saying that while he definitely defends students' rights to protest, he condemns the chaos that's being created at some of the universities because of it.
Palestinians may be eligible for a variety of existing pathways to enter the United States, such as immigrant or non-immigrant visas.
The April jobs reports was released moments ago. The U.S. economy added 175,000 jobs last month. That is lower than the 240,000 that economists were expecting. The unemployment rate ticked up to 3.9%.
The job numbers just came out and they're horrible. And they're very, and I say that not happily, I say that very unhappily. But the numbers are horrible. It's just these people are destroying our country. Here's another sign of it.
The U.S. government can't go bankrupt because we can print our own money.
So why does the government even borrow?
Well, some of this stuff gets... Some of the language that some of the language and concepts are just confusing. I mean, the government definitely prints money, and it definitely lends that money, which is why the government definitely prints money, and then it lends that money by selling bonds. Is that what they do? I guess I can't really talk. I don't get it. I don't know what they're talking about. The government clearly prints money, it does it all the time, and it clearly borrows. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this debt and deficit conversation. So I don't think there's anything confusing there.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard today's edition of Human Events Daily, live from Washington, D.C. Today is May 3rd, 2024. Anno Domini, we just heard there was Biden's chief economist on his economic council. This guy, by the way, doesn't actually have a background in economics, yet he's the chief of Biden's council. So I want people to understand, obviously this man knows nothing about finance, he knows nothing about the economy, he certainly has no idea what he's talking about, underqualified in every possible way for his position. And yet he's the one that Biden put in charge. Do you think this is being done by accident? Do you think any of this is being done by accident? No. We are in what's called the unraveling. By the way, we're currently waiting for Donald Trump. He might be coming out to address the audience there at his courtroom, where the president of the United States, number one candidate, former president of the United States, his candidacy is number one in the country. He's beating Joe Biden in every poll. And he's on trial right now because they arrested him four times rather than directly run against him. We'll take that live if he comes up. But I want people to understand, when you're looking at the insanity on campuses, when you're looking at the insanity in our government, I want you to be fully, fully awake when it comes to this. You must be fully awake. Totalitarian rule through the destabilization of our country is the agenda that's going on right now. And feckless Republicans are up there, have no idea what is actually happening. They would rather pass laws censoring American citizens than actually do anything to put pressure on the levers of power that are destroying this country. And make no mistake, they are hell-bent on destroying this country. Because they believe, now there's various interests. Some believe that they can make money off the destruction of America. Some believe, and rightly so, that they will gain power over the destruction of America. And we've seen the left do this since the 1960s, march further and further towards the full destabilization and destruction of our country in order to attain their own power. Always in the name, of course, of equality and justice and the downtrodden and fighting for rights. But it really isn't about that. It's about tearing down the good, tearing down the achievers, tearing down those that make society run. The question is, are people going to rise up and actually do something about it? We'll see. Mike Benz joins us next.
I want to know the truth, what really went down. So I'm jumping on my computer, going to pre-order town.
Ladies and gentlemen, one of the best ways that you can support us here at Human Events and the work that we do is subscribing to us on our Rumble channel. Make sure you're subscribed. You hit the notifications so you'll never miss a clip. You'll never miss a new live episode, and we're putting them out every single day of the week.
They talk about influencers. These are influencers, and they're friends of mine. Jack Posobiec. Where's Jack? Jack. He's done a great job.
All right, folks, I want to tell you all about today's sponsor, My Patriot Supply. Just like the earthquake that shook the Northeast a few weeks ago or the attacks in the Middle East, most emergencies will come without warning. And when the next one comes, you won't have time to pack and prepare. You need to get ready now before an emergency strikes. Your supplies need to be ready to grab and go right away. Secure those supplies at MyPatriotSupply.com. Start with a four-week emergency food kit from My Patriot Supply. That's what me and the Poso family did, helping millions of Americans prepare since 2008. My Patriot Supply are the experts in self-reliance. Their four-week emergency food kits offer over 2,000 calories a day, protected by heavy-duty four-layer packaging. These kits last up to 25 years. Sealed inside these rugged-handled buckets, they're made to grab quickly. So go to MyPatriotSupply.com and save $50 per kit. They ship fast and free in unmarked boxes. Save $50 per kit at MyPatriotSupply.com. Again, MyPatriotSupply.com. We're still waiting to see whether or not President Trump is going to address, I'm sure he will address the audience when he comes out there, the assembled masses, the press, as it were, outside of his courtroom trial that's going on right now. So when that happens, rest assured, we will take that live. But in the meantime, we've got, you know, a little bit of a downstep from President Trump, but not that far, because we've got Mike Benz, the executive director of the Foundation for Freedom Online, joining us. What's up, Benz?
How you doing, Jack? Great to see you.
So slight downgrade from the, you know, the eternal president of the United States, slight downgrade, but not too far. Benz,
the warm-up
I wanted
act.
To ask
the
you,
warm-up act.
The warm-up act, a little bit. Yeah, we're all the warm-up act around here, man. What I wanted to ask you is, when I'm looking at Congress right now, we're talking about censorship, this new censorship bill, which really is a kind of a speech code that's being pushed by Republicans, is now coming out. That what I want to ask is, what is really going on in Congress with the bills that we see being pushed, the Ukraine bill, this new bill on campuses? Is it just they don't understand what's going on, or is there something at the higher level that we can't perceive in terms of the powers at play?
Well, I think there's both. It's a big thing to take in what's all happening in the free speech space, in what I covered, the censorship industry. It really does require to really get your arms all around it, a kind of PhD in a field that is only a couple of years old. And with everything else that the average member of Congress needs to know about, everything from the tax code to foreign policy to domestic infrastructure issues, adding on a whole new knowledge set around the censorship industry is a very difficult thing that requires us as citizens and voters and people on social media to amplify, turn the amp up to 11 so that they know how important it is to the voters. But I think there's also a lot happening right now in terms of foreign policy vis-a-vis the Middle East that is, you know, leading to all kinds of proxy wars when it comes to this new bill versus, you know, the Hamas and the Palestinian kind of issues. And, you know, there's a lot of this goes back to, frankly, the Trump campaign in 2015, when these same issues flared in a huge way around the Iran deal, which was basically an Obama administration alliance with Iran and you know, to the detriment of folks in Israel. And this is actually when a lot of this definitional work around this bill actually began. And so, you know, this is a continuation of a long proxy war over foreign policy that is having, you know, collateral damage on domestic politics.
And this is what I think people keep asking the question about, because they say, wait a minute, we can see these things coming from the federal government. We can see these particularly from the Republicans in government. And all of a sudden, they'll ask these questions about why is it that there are times when the Republicans seem, and particularly the establishment Republicans, seem incredibly easy to run. When Ukraine, for example, when Ukraine is threatened, all of a sudden Republicans are up there. We need to defend freedom, whatever the cost. It doesn't matter how expensive it is. We're going to go all the way in. But when it seems like it's time to defend the rights and freedoms of the American people or the border or our own freedom of speech, all of a sudden they come up with all of these, you know, quote unquote, principled reasons that we can't do something like that. That's not really the reason, is it?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I think a lot of this is because people who want the best for this country come into it from a nationalist perspective, from a national perspective. And they look at members of Congress and think they represent the nation. And they look at our companies and think they represent, you know, a force projection or jobs or, you know, the best of our best in commerce in of our nation. And that really misses how this nation actually got to be the nation that we think it is, which is through our multinational force projection. And this is really where, you know, I think what you're talking about, the deep cause of it actually is. You know, so members of Congress have to get funding to get elected. It was none other than Senator Joe Biden who complained about this in the 1970s. I think this was on or around, you know, his 30th birthday, essentially, where he did a speech to the Council on Foreign Relations, and he talked about, you know, how much of a pain in the butt it is and who you need to sell your soul out to. And he even described himself as a, quote, prostitute in order to get enough corporations and donors to give him money to be able to successfully run for office. Now, corporate donors are not a national phenomenon. They're all multinational. JP Morgan Chase, multinational. Most of the business is not in the US. Goldman Sachs, multinational. Most of the business is not in the US. ExxonMobil, multinational. Most of their business is outside the US. Walmart, multinational. Most of their business is outside the US. Every single one of them has more of an investment outside the US than inside the US. So foreign policy is a bigger deal to them than domestic policy,
that President Trump is on his way up to make an announcement, and it looks like the network is cutting us to that. Is he out there, right? Oh, I see the entourage coming, the doors. All right, guys, is he coming out or is that a false alarm? Okay, Benz, he walked through, but he blew right past the cameras, it looks like. So please, sorry about that. Continue.
Well,
he's got some spicy Truth Social. Keep an eye on True Social posts because there's some spice coming. There's some heaters that are about to be thrown.
You know, I love that thing he posted earlier with the alligators at the border. You know, he basically tweeted or truthed out a picture of alligators at the border saying this will be our border defense policy. And I actually think that he should formally run on that plank. You know, just here's my idea. Alligators at the border. We draw a little moat. We just put alligators in it. And that's it. You don't even need guards. Just get enough alligators.
He's been doing this. You know, he's been doing something like this at the rallies where, you know, the media doesn't really pay much attention. This sort of like, it's not like his big policy planks or even, he's doing it a little more on True Social, but he'll have these little asides, these little comments at the rallies, right? And I know you know what I'm talking about, where he'll say things like that. Oh, and we're going to have rallies. We're going to have alligators all throughout the moats. And everybody just kind of laughs. And then he goes on to something else. And
that's
the media doesn't
idea.
Write it up. And he's been doing it for like a year at this point, and nobody picks up on it.
Yeah. No, it's great. I mean, honestly, get the policy shop to draft up, you know, an EO on what we need to do to get alligators. I mean, it totally changes the conversation. It's almost like you push past the sale. It's like, now you get to negotiating on, well, okay, we got to do something, but maybe not alligators. You know, it's a... But yeah, no, I totally agree. And
how many alligators should we have? This photo is full of alligators. I want at least 50, you know, and then you call it compromise. You say, all right, guys, all right, we're only going to have half the amount of alligators that we initially wanted. And then it's like, it's the old sales tactic, right? Of if you want the lamppost, you ask for the moon. So,
right.
You know, I want border security. So what do I say? I'm going to put alligators in there, and the border wall should be electric. What was that joke? They say everything in America is going electric. I think that's great. Let's start with the border wall. you keep going with all these things, and eventually it changes the conversation to get to the point where, and he did this initially most famously with just talking about the need for a border wall in the first place.
Right. No, that's great. Change the conversation to just how many alligators will we need? Well, we're going to have a difficult policy debate about just how many alligators. Some people want 1 million alligators. Some people just want 100,000. This is basically what they did with the Ukraine bill to get it to 60 billion, starting from 100 billion and whatnot. But that's where we are on this. I think Trump is looking healthy and powerful. I thought the pizza delivery was honestly a kind of timeless moment. And also to see that in the heart of New York City, with the firefighters there, and you really see the massive divide between the base of unions and the leadership of unions, which is a whole nother issue, because the unions at the high level are connected to the same foreign policy blob. The biggest union we have in this country is the AFL-CIO, which used to be nicknamed the AFL-CIA because it works hand in glove with the CIA as their top rent-a-riot fomenter all around the world. You know, there's dozens and dozens of countries that the riots that have been orchestrated to overthrow governments have come from the AFL-CIO being used to incubate the workers within that country and then have them all take to the streets simultaneously. And they're doing the same thing here. That's actually a part of the Brazil censorship story as well. AFL-CIO is backing Lula and worked with the CIA cutout to basically get the internet censorship stuff done in Brazil. I mean, it's a wild story, I can tell you about more.
Quick break coming up. We'll see if President Trump comes back. We've got the cameras up there. Real America's Voice. Stay tuned. Right back. Mike Benz.
Good. I rolled with Bloods. And them boys had a saying. You can't be listening to all that slappy whack. Trim out his outlets, a bam ship. Nippy bam bam. Like Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live here, Human Events Daily. We're speaking with Mike Benz for the Foundation of Freedom Online. And Benz, I got to ask you a question because, well, a slight story, but a little bit of a question. So I was over in CPAC Hungary. Then we also did Make Europe Great Again in Romania, in Bucharest. Had a really great time over there meeting with so many patriots. Got to meet some of the Vox guys over in Spain, spend time with them as well. And it was so interesting that particularly from the guys that I was speaking with from behind the Iron Curtain in Eastern Europe, they weren't asking me the question, can Trump win? Or, you know, do you think Trump will win? They said, do you think Trump will be allowed to win? And let's face it, those guys on that side of what was the former Iron Curtain, which is now ironically kind of the freer side of Europe, kept asking, you know, they know. They said when the government starts coming after you and starts ginning up these cases, they know that the idea is you become too much of a problem and you won't be allowed back into power. So I'm going to put that question to you, Benz. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's where we are. It's 100% where we are. But there's something, you know, dirty behind that, which is the forces that we're up against are professionals at doing exactly what you just described, which is not allowing a duly elected president to become the president. Here's just like a couple recent examples. And some folks might not like this because I am strongly, you know, anti-socialist communist. But the fact is this Congress, this CIA, this State Department, this DOD declared that Juan Guaido was the president of Venezuela at less than 10% of the polls. He was a CIA-backed operative who, frankly, was being backed by other CIA-backed narco gangs. And they had an election in Venezuela, and Juan Guaido was declared the winner by the State Department, even though he got like less than 10% of the vote. Then go to Belarus. You know, in Belarus, Alexander Lukashenko, the president, who's been present there for almost 30 years now, in the summer of 2020, they had an election. He won 85% of the vote, but the U.S. State Department declared Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, this CIA-backed, basically puppet candidate, with only 7% of the vote, the president. And in both cases, the Treasury passed sanctions. The U.S. Treasury kicked those countries off the dollar because they refused to recognize the presidency of the CIA-backed puppet. Now, I find this, you know, and this happens. Those are just in the past 3 years, those two examples. I could rattle off dozens in the past two decades. So this exact group who's responsible for Russiagate, this exact group who's responsible for the Ukraine impeachment, this exact group who's frankly responsible for the 91 felony indictments of Donald Trump, is the exact group who is professionally, professionally capacity built to deny election results to people who win on the face of elections in order to stop them from taking power.
And this is something, by the way, just so you know, on the Juan Guaido stuff, I mean, we called that out in real time when that was going on. I mean, complete joke, utter joke. And that was a Mike Pompeo and John Bolton special that they were running with some of their guys at the State Department, some of their point people on that. And it was completely insane. It was completely insane from the start. And actually, what people may forget, I'm sure you remember this one as well, what they did to trick John Bolton in terms of that was they essentially had a bunch of informants that were double agents for the Venezuelan government who were giving false information to the CIA. I see this spot. You remember this one. They were giving him false information that said if Juan Guaido declares himself the president and like leads this march on the Capitol, that they are going to, you know, everyone's going to flip and the government of Venezuela is going to fall and they're all going to be for you. And actually, the entire thing was a setup by the Venezuelans. So they came in, found out everybody who was against the government and rounded up every single one of them and had them arrested. Meanwhile, you've got Pompeo and Bolton. I think the tweets are probably still up. And they actually ran using bot farms on Twitter. Back then it was Twitter 1.0. They ran bot farms on Twitter, amplifying all this. Marco Rubio, who is currently one of the on the short list for vice president right now, Marco Rubio was a full-throated supporter of this color revolution, by the way, was all in on it, which obviously is something that needs to be said as we're talking about putting Marco Rubio as the vice president and in the driver's seat for a 2028 candidacy, that he was fully in on this. And so all the bots were like amplifying their accounts, but it was actually a total entrapment scheme by the Venezuelans, and all of the dissidents got arrested. Not good. Not so good. Totally got played.
Yeah. And notwithstanding all of that, and the fact that Guaido had like no support in the country, even in polling, like way less than 10%, he was still announced a year and a half after the elections, in a bicameral meeting of Congress, as the president of Venezuela, with less than 10% of the vote. And so now you have a situation where Donald Trump could win 51, 52% of the vote. You think if they don't call Guaido the president, and they don't call Lukashenko the president at 85% of the vote, that they're going to call Trump the president with 51% or 52%? No way. Well, maybe one way, which is having a VP like Marco Rubio and having stated compromises on foreign policy where the blob feels comfortable that they will at least continue to get their cut. Like, I'm very interested, for example, in what Trump said to David Cameron when David Cameron, who is the head of the UK Foreign Office, which is the head of the blob for the United Kingdom, which is the money side of our American muscle over there in London. Last month, David Cameron made a personal trip to Mar-a-Lago to have a talk with Donald Trump about what his plans would be if president on NATO and on Russia and on Ukraine. And, you know, I suspect things like Trump coming out obviously reluctant, but then finally kind of acquiescent to this new $60 billion don't have to pay it back, no interest, no maturity loan, i.e., you know, $60 billion, just friggin' take it. Trump getting behind that, I think, signaled to the blob, well, you know what? It might be uncomfortable if Trump's president. It's going to suck that he's going to get a few guys of his own into the bureaucracy. You know, he might change the tax rate or something, but as long as he promises to play ball and we get enough people around him who can force him to, or we have enough leverage because of, you know, who's around him, that, you know, we can basically take him out if he goes the wrong way and the right people will rise up, you know, in the power structure. You know, that might be a way that they avoid the international scandal of just how far they might need to go to take him out otherwise.
Well, that's what it comes down to. I mean, I think at the end of the day, people need to understand that it sounds kind of silly, but the best way to prevent this is to have a resounding victory for Trump at the polls. If you've got a victory that's only, to your point, 1 to 2 points above, they are going to say that this isn't big enough, or they're going to throw ballots in there or do whatever they can. But if Trump wins by like 5 points or 6 points or 7 points, and Trump actually and the Republicans totally embrace early voting and mail-in balloting and do everything they can, because remember, I mean, the Democrats basically legalized ballot stuffing. So, okay, well then where's our ballot stuffing operations? Legally, where applicable, blah, blah, blah. Lawyers are going to get upset about that one. And the point is if you can do this above what I call the margin of fraud, then it's the public opinion is going to be so against them coming in and declaring it a non-presidency that it's just simply not going to win. Because Trump knows this, by the way, is that, you know, they don't want to risk the United States being thrown into civil war over this. And they know they are getting close to the precipice. And that's really the last card. And Trump knows he has that card. That's why he kind of always is making these statements sort of, you know, sort of foreshadowing it or referencing it in some ways I don't think he personally wants to do anything like that. I think that's totally beyond his way of thinking, but he knows it's certainly there. And so the idea then is you must win with enough public backing essentially to overcome all of these operations. And it's going to be rough. What kind of stuff do you expect? I mean, actually, let me ask you this way. Do you expect a color revolution operation to take place in the United States prior to the election of 2024?
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, I think, first of all, you know, one of the most instructive things to take a step back and sort of think about is Michael McFaul's 7-step bullet point playlist for how to pull off a successful color revolution, you know, and what it all takes to do that. He wrote, you know, McFaul is basically the head of the Stanford Air and Observatory. He's the head of the Freeman Spogli Institute, which is on top of it. This is the stamp that exact cell was what was used to censor the 2020 election. Everything you couldn't post about mail-in ballots from April 2020 to November 2020 was all because of this cell underneath Michael McFaul and attached to our Department of Homeland Security. And, you know, McFaul, I find it very interesting with what you're talking about, with the margin of victory necessary at the polls to be able to create a sort of too big to rig scenario so that
basically.
They'd have to do something so extraordinary to overcome it. Is that one of those seven steps in creating a successful color revolution is to seed ambiguity and doubt over the results of the previous election, which is to call the last election not legitimate and create the presumption. And part of this involves another step in the seven-step process, which involves creating a surround sound of so-called free and independent media, meaning CIA or state U.S. State Department or USAID funded or National Endowment for Democracy funded media organizations.
Ben, we are coming up against a break. Can I hold you over just to finish your thought on this?
Yeah.
Because this is fascinating. Just to finish your thought, and then we'll cut you loose, because this is absolutely fascinating. And more importantly, this is what we need to prepare for going into the fall.
Jack, where is Jack? Where is Jack? Where is he? Jack, I want to see you. Great job, Jack. Thank you. What a job you do. You know, we have an incredible thing. We're always talking about the fake news and the bad, but we have guys, and these are the guys who should be getting Pulitzers.
All right, Jack Posobiec, we are back here at Human Events Daily. When we finished Mike Benz, we had to cut him off for the break. He was describing us the stages of the color revolution by Michael McFaul. Benz, please continue.
Yeah, so part of this seven-step process that McFaul laid out, and McFaul was the U.S. ambassador to Russia who got kicked out of Russia for allegedly trying to orchestrate a coup under his lead of the State Department. And again, the State Department leads all the CIA efforts. So he was the quarterback of the Central Intelligence Agency attempts to regime change all Russia and all the satellite states. And, you know, he's a scholar in color revolution statecraft. He's published probably 100 articles over the years, or in books as well. And part of that seven-step playlist of what he describes you need to do is to seed and create, using a surround sound of U.S. State Department-funded media organs coming from within that country so that it looks organic, the idea that the election was not legitimate. And because the election was not legitimate, they can pull off a coup under the guise of a counter-coup. That is, if you say the election is illegitimate and the other person's stealing it, you're justified in extraordinary actions in stealing it from that person because they stole it first. Essentially, is how the logic of that goes, and that has a lot of force in revolutionary kind of action. Now, I think that what's going to happen here is they're going to use a trick around what they call voter suppression. And they flirted with this before. They're still talking about it in the background in all the stuff that I follow on this. And this is this idea that if Trump wins in a nail-biter election, because remember, they did do this color revolution in 2020. That was what the Transition Integrity Project was. You literally had the highest levels of our intelligence and our military, and both previous leaders of the RNC and DNC, Donna Brazile and Michael Steele, and John Podesta personally role-playing Joe Biden in soliciting BLM for street muscle to shut down the country, and then wargaming exactly what would be needed to do to steal the election from Trump if he won. And they also included in that playbook the necessity of positing that Trump was stealing the election, even though he won at the Electoral College, in order to mobilize those forces. So I think that what they're going to do here is they're going to make an argument around what they call voter suppression, this idea that Trump did something or said something on social media or his followers, did something that basically suppressed the vote from certain portions of the population, whether that's an ethnic voting bloc or whether that's a youth demographic or whether that's, something to do with voter registrations. And they'll have some sort of fake academic empirical, sort of statistics to hold up and say, see, he won by 100,000 votes. And we can show that 500,000 votes or a million votes were suppressed using these methods. So the election was not legitimate. We actually won. He's stealing it. And so we get to do, we get to do a counter coup to stop the coup.
So they will essentially be saying there's voter suppression. And it's amazing because in many ways it's a replay, but in the inverse of 2020. An incredible warning that everybody needs to watch out for. Mike Benz, where can people follow you, man?
Best places on X at Mike Benz Cyber. I also have a Rumble, Mike Ben Cyber, and we're dropping a mega bomb of a report on Monday of this week at foundationforfreedomonline.com.
God bless. Make sure everyone goes and supports the FFO. Make sure you check out Mike Benz and the Office Hours as well. Really excited to bring on, now, I believe for the first time, Anthony Cabasa. He is a citizen journalist, and he was out there covering the UCLA riots. Anthony, how you doing, man? And are you in one piece?
Yeah, barely, but we made it back safely, man, by the grace of God. But thanks so much for having me, Jack. I really appreciate you.
I really appreciate you being out there and doing what you did. So just full, you know, step back. We've all seen the videos. We've seen the clashes. I was at Chaz myself in 2020, so I remember how a lot of this went down. But what was your one biggest takeaway? Or let me put it this way. What was the one thing that people at home get wrong the most about these riots and these events?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that, especially here locally in LA, is that the aggressors are the state, the aggressors are the police, that, you know, these are completely peaceful, sanctioned protests, which, of course, we all have that First Amendment right to peacefully assemble. But the thing that they're getting wrong specifically about UCLA is that they sectioned off and quarantined off public space that's available for everyone, including students that they were, you know, saying you cannot come through. There were viral videos of not just Jewish students, but other UCLA students that were not allowed in because they said, we're only allowing allies in here. And if you're an ally, someone on the inside has to vouch that you're an ally. So they basically have to vet you. And then you are given a wristband to be allowed to enter public space that is supposed to be really protected, of course, by the Constitution, but also by police and people, you know, that swear an oath to defend the Constitution. And so when we were talking to security there, they were saying that they're not doing anything. They said the keys to this public space have been completely given by the school administration in the hands of the protesters here, which, again, were discriminating against students, some Jewish, some Black. If you were not friendly to them, they were only allowing media in there that they deemed friendly. If no one knew who you were, or if you consider yourself an independent, basically, you show up. If you don't say you're pro-Palestine and you're with them, they won't let you in, even if you are media, which is, of course, completely illegal. And so it's important that people realize that, you know, anyone's for peaceful assembly of people, you know. And in many ways, I think that what they're advocating for, if they truly were or are there for anti-war and foreign aid to countries, I'm sure a lot of people could probably jump on top of that. But that just simply wasn't the case at UCLA.
Well, when you say that wasn't the case, and you explain to us that it wasn't necessarily something where people from all sides were allowed in, let's talk about the violence that we saw, because we're hearing a lot of competing claims about who started the violence. People are saying it was peaceful until the police arrived. Other people are saying no, it was the rioters who started this. What did you observe when it came to the question of violence?
Yeah, so it's important to note that I was talking to LAPD source. They told me, you know, the first night where there was a big pro-Israel side against the Palestinian side, there was school security there present. And actually, UCLA had taken extra measures to hire additional security. However, there was no LAPD present. I was talking to LAPD source and I asked why they were not. And they said because the school actually cut ties with them. I haven't verified this yet. Back during the Black Lives Matter riots of George Floyd, that was one of the demands by the Black Lives Matter organizers, saying that the schools need to cut ties with local law enforcement, and UCLA allegedly complied with that. And so that's why it took so long for LAPD to respond. It took upwards of 4 to 5 hours for LAPD to respond on day one when there was only security present. Now, as far as who has been the aggressor, that's kind of like where it kind of gets a little nuanced, a little layered. We have seen videos of students being harassed. I myself was robbed of my property. I myself was falsely imprisoned, which I'm actually talking to an attorney, a civil rights attorney, about potentially filing a class action lawsuit against UCLA. Because you got to understand, once they sanction this and they say, we authorize this, they are now held liable for anything that happens within that space. And so the fact that journalists like myself were getting robbed of their property and falsely imprisoned, where I wasn't allowed to move at all by these students, then now you're looking at legal trouble. And so up until the police came, there were still cases of violence documented, of course, by the pro-Palestinian encampment folk, including aggression toward other students, journalists, and stuff. And so the violence was already kind of already there. And I think that what led UCLA to finally get LAPD on board was that night before LAPD showed up and police showed up, there was a big pro-Israel side. And I am unsure of exactly how it started. I kind of got late there. I was circling the encampment. And when I got back, I had noticed that security had been maced. I don't know by what group, because both groups had mace with them, the pro-Israeli side and the pro-Palestinian side, which is fairly common for people to carry that in Los Angeles.
Real quick before we go to the break, are you saying that it's that essentially that UCLA issued a stand down order to their security?
That is correct. I actually confirmed that, and I have that on video from that
this,
night.
This
security
is huge.
Stood by
Everyone needs
watched.
To stay with this. A stand down order issued by UCLA. Anthony Cabasa has got the details. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I'm always listening to Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live, Human Events Daily. Exclusive reporting live from inside the UCLA Gaza riots, where Anthony Cabasa is breaking down the story. People are asking, how did these riots get so big? How did the camps get so big that they metastasize into riots? He's got the information, and unfortunately, it's what we all feared, a stand-down order to the campus security prior to the LAPD getting involved. Anthony, please continue telling us the story and walk us through how it was that you discovered that such an order was issued in the first place.
Right. So earlier during the day, before any of the protesting actually started, or the riots between both factions of the pro-Israeli side and the pro-Palestine side, where police didn't show up for about 5 hours, I actually had my property seized and I was falsely imprisoned by some of the pro-Palestine encampment folk. Obviously, it's public property. As a journalist, I'm legally allowed to go in there. Security verified with me that I am legally allowed to go in there, but that it was really up to the students to decide if they wanted to let me in there or not. And so they falsely imprisoned me and restricted my movement for quite some time. And I have that documented. But the thing, interesting part is, this is where I kind of started understanding the gravity of the situation. When I reported my property stolen to UCPD, first I asked security, excuse me, security, I just had my property stolen. Can you please retrieve it? And they're like, we're sorry, there's nothing that we can do. The administration has asked that you talk to faculty regarding those issues. When I talked to faculty, because they were all kind of nearby with next to each other, the faculty said, oh, there's nothing we can do. You're going to have to report it to UCPD, which is like their campus police department. There was a squad car. I went up to them. They rolled down their window and I said, hello, I'd like to report property stolen. I see the guy right now. Can you please help me retrieve my property that was stolen from my hands? And they said, unfortunately, we've been ordered to stand down. The only way we are able to interfere or work with anyone is if your life is in imminent danger. We're going to have to ask you to go to UCPD headquarters and file a complaint with the department and file that your property has been stolen. And I told the police officers, but you're here right now. I see the thief. If I go file this thing, the guy's going to be gone with my property. And they're like, sorry, that's what the administration told us to do. They told us to stand down. That was the first time I understood, okay, what's going on here? And then further down the night, when we had the pro-Israel group show up, because there were supporters there the entire time. Obviously, people show up with Israel flags, American flags. Parents, students, Jewish students were showing up to kind of show like, hey, we're here. We're not going to be silenced, et cetera, et cetera. And so that same night, security was the only thing standing between the pro-Palestinian encampment and the pro-Israel group. And what ended up happening was somehow security was spray maced and the security ended up abandoning their post. At that point, the barricades, the only steel barricades, were broken down in order for the two factions to just kind of go head to head, catch them. The entire night, campus security that was hired by UCLA was told to stand down. And they actually watched from the steps for hours, all of them just huddled together. It was maybe about 15 of them. They were just watching from the sidelines all the chaos ensuing. And I went up to them and asked them multiple times, where is LAPD? These guys are beating each other with metal steel rods over the head. There's people bleeding. People are getting maced. They need medical attention. They looked at me and said, dude, we're security. What do you expect us to do? There's 15 of us. There's about 1,000 people here. And we have been told by the police, by the school administration, not to interfere if there's any violence or any of that. And that's why we're just here. So I think the only reason they remain present is because they're technically on the clock. They're not just allowed to go home or they're not going to get paid. So they just got paid to stand down and stand by watching chaos, anarchy, and violence ensue. And it wasn't up until like 2:30 in the morning that police finally arrived. And when the police arrived, it still took about an hour for them to finally and successfully take control of the situation and separate both groups that were present.
And this really is the issue. So the question then becomes for us, and I'm sure you're investigating this, who was it that made that decision? Was it the campus president? Was it the administration? Was it security? Was it the campus, the chief of security, whoever the director was? That's what really needs to come down. And I'll just say that I was, can't say the name, but I was speaking to a very high level member of the Republican, high level Republican yesterday. And I specifically said the main thing we need to look at going forward are investigations into connections and communications between the campus and these organizers. Because the question then becomes, was there communication from the group? And perhaps if you have any information about this, if there was communication between the group organizers themselves and either the faculty or the administration of the campus, whereby in not only were they calling for the stand down order, but perhaps they were asking the organizers whether or not they wanted a stand down order.
As a matter of fact, you're right. So according to the sources that I saw and the Telegram chats that I saw myself from this encampment leadership to the members that were there in the tents and there for days, there were multiple times where school administration did meet with the people inside the encampment. One, for safety, obviously. They had fire marshals there going around the encampment, making sure that there was proper egress, that they had, you know, what they needed in case of any kind of medical or you know, fire or anything like that. So for sure, every single day, these organizers were communicating with school staff and vice versa. Multiple messages that I saw, especially come Wednesday, which was 2 days ago, May 1st, I believe, the UCLA chancellor finally had enough and declared the encampment unlawful and were telling the protesters that they needed to leave the encampment or that LAPD would be called or police would be called to break it all down. At that point, the Telegram organizers sent out a message to their members saying that the encampment had been deemed unlawful, that they were expecting it. However, to avoid police presence, that they were going to begin negotiations and a list of demands to be met the following day in order for them to actually leave. And of course, some of these demands, I believe one of the demands being made was that they abolish all police and security in the campus for the protection of people of color and minorities and their Palestinian brothers. Of course, we already know what this jargon actually means, right? This is all Marxist ideology. This is all anti-cop ideology. Abolitionists, anarchists that just want to see these demands met. So throughout the entire time, there was negotiations being done and somehow it just failed there and it just spiraled into anarchy and chaos.
Incredible, incredible work. Go follow. We got to get you back on, man. Go follow Anthony Cabasa _ on X. This is the place to go. Encrypted Telegram chats. We're going to be digging into this. HumanEvents.com, Postmillennial. Make sure you're following along, folks. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, you have my permission to lay a short.